was so good of you to do that. Ivan, it was just terrific that you came up with that number.
I have lapses into numerical existence.
Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, I guess. It must be, because we're talking about Life in the Labyrinth by E.J. Gold. And we are on Chapter 15. And this is our part two of our exploration of Chapter 15. The first half was last week. And there's just, these last few chapters are so, there's so much data. And the reason that there's so much data is because we are purposely, and this is the invitation to this book, we're purposely spending time in an area that is actually foreign to the human biological machine. It is one of the tools we use to get there. But we're exploring a new land. And in exploring that new land, that's what we want to do. And it's allowing us to learn how to be explorers in a place that it's not natural to us. So we're taking our time, and the reason we're taking our time is that we want to leave markers as we go along. We want to leave markers, like you see the hikers on these, on the trails up around the mountains here, these little
cairns,
stacks of rocks known as cairns. And it's their mark of how to find their way back and to let them know that they've been there before. So let's see if we've been there before. So we kind of stopped at page 188 in the new version. We had read the paragraph that starts with formatted sound waves. Do you see that? You're about...
Starts with, oh yeah, here it is, from the top of 168.
Okay, so 168 of the old version. And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs here just to get us going as a way of, let's just say, loosening the limbs. These will be warm-up exercises, stretching exercises. So, like all rarefied elements, higher emotions can sometimes be generated by formatted sound in the form of music and other plastic media, and may, whether we are in an allowing mood or not, help us to transcend that part of ourselves which remains dependent on the not-so-late Neolithic bone-banging concepts of contemporary human civilization, leaning heavily as they do upon the musical doilies of the Baroque. A little. So, what is that saying to us? And this is really going to set the tone for where we're going to go tonight. What is the author, what is E.J. Gold implying here when he's talking? What is he saying? Not philosophically, just in a kind of in a straightforward, pragmatic way. Actually, I want to back up.
You want to back up from this music paragraph?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
I want to back up like two pages to the paragraph that starts with the mood of one chamber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 166.
Okay. And I, now that I think of it, I think that is where we left off, not where I mistakenly started us. The mood of one chamber is not far removed from the human primate world, and one well explored by even very schooled primitive shaman of the post-Sumerian fame might best be described by the phrase, "By golly, I am my brother's keeper." We may see here a vague similarity with certain Old and New Testament reports of this macro-dimensional cognition, with the notable absence of the higher mental formulation, by golly. Mm-hmm. So let's look at that and just take a note of this. The mood of one chamber. This is an important paragraph, actually. So the mood of one chamber is not far removed from the human primate world. So, one of the things that we're being told here is that one of the elements to note when we're in those chambers is a mood, that a certain mood is present. And that is going to be, that's going to become a tool of navigation more and more for us. And it's, we're in, as we learned in the human biological machine, emotions are, if the, of that machine are primarily reactive items. Mm-hmm. We react either with joy or react to sadness, but it's just reactive to something in the outer world. In this sense, we are imbuing the space with a mood. We are, and once we are in that space, then we allow the mood, in a sense, to envelop us. And then we, there's an interplay with that mood. But then it goes on to say, for some reason he brings us this particular chamber up called I Am My Brother's Keeper.
Yeah, it's interesting that that's the label of the mood also. I mean, it seems like a principle or ethics or morals or something, but it's a, he's characterizing that as a mood.
Okay, so what would be the difference?
Well, in another mood, not so beneficial, it might be, shoot when you see the whites of their eyes, or, you know, every man for himself, it would be a more primary.
Well, if something called, like last 2 weeks ago, we explored the quatrain, and we briefly touched into the chamber called all phenomena is illusion. We could feel that chamber, and we could feel its mood. So, and it looks like on the surface that that's meaning, right? Oh, what's the philosophy? What do you mean by all phenomena is illusion? Oh, I see. No, it's the mood called all phenomena is illusion. And when you get into the space called that, there's a form of knowledge there, but it's more like understanding. So place yourself in the mood called, I am my brother's keeper. And if you are in the mood called, I am my brother's keeper, you're not doing it out of an external duty. It's just what's in the chamber.
Well,
you're in the chamber of that. Yes, Susan.
Well, I was going to say, by golly, I am my brother's keeper.
Yes.
And it just brings us to, one, we are, you're taking care of yourself because it brings it back to how we are all one. And the good of the individual is the good of the whole.
So part of this particular work that we're doing is to practice that. So if you practice the sensitivity of I am my brother's keeper, you practice that. And it's not, oh, I should be helping people because that's what you're supposed to do. That's a different thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the mood of it. The mood of it, you're compelled. Without thought, you're compelled to do what is the appropriate thing for that space. That's more how you move in that manner. So how you move in the chamber called, I am my brother's keeper, is finding that space internally. If you find that space internally, then what to do opens up to you very clearly. And it won't be, and it may not ever be, linear in any way. All right? Mm-hmm. It may not be, it could be linear, but it might not be also linear. And that's what we have to discover by experimentation here, where we live, when we live more in that world of garnering the mood of it, then that's the, let's just say, that's the passion upon which we move, rather than doing the right thing because it's the rules to do it. Does this make any sense?
It does, and I think using the by golly lets you have that realization to where it's not an obligation, it's just a realization that yes, that's what you do in this space.
Oh, right. I am my brother's keeper. I see. Mm-hmm. You find that, you discover that, and so it's not a deduction of logic. It's a implementation of your inner passion and the love that you have. And this is, we'll get to that part later. But, okay? In this dimensional level, co-voyaging shaman must, by strict obedience, voluntary conforming sense of a willow bending in the wind, I like that. In this dimensional level, the co-voyaging shaman must be responsible for one another, acting as personification of the mood of obligation which characterizes the reflective state in its most manifested form. What is that? How does that ring to you? Be responsible for one another. What does that even mean in this context? Tough one, isn't it?
I have to say, unfortunately, my computer is acting up.
Okay.
Otherwise, I would more happily share the comments.
Okay. Janet,
you've got
some
comments over
if
there?
If there's a comment raised, if there's, what's that?
Sensitive,
be sensitive, aware from Jim.
And Becky says, like, you are not separate. You are anyway. So
Becky is saying, as if you're not separate. And that's what Susan was saying earlier. You kind of discover the fact that we are all part of it.
David, Hawk Lady says, doing it with love without thinking about the rule.
Thank you, Harry. Doing it without thinking about the rule. You're in a sense, you're compelled to do it from just being properly in the space. So part of it is finding the mood of that proper space. Like we tend to find it a little bit each Wednesday when we get together. There's a mood that starts to engender itself. And we want to help each other and encourage each other's insights as they are on the log or whatnot. Okay? So one of the elements of it is truly that you're responsible for someone else, for each other, but part of it is because you're so aware of each other. It's the awareness of commonality. And there's a deference to the importance of those spaces together. Okay?
David Aria says, it seems that we are responsible to help our fellow voyagers hold the mood and stay connected to their shifts.
And sometimes the fellow voyagers are, sometimes our job is just to help hold the mood. We aren't doing anything as such. We're just supporting the mood with our attention and presence, because that's what we have. We have attention and presence, and in that regard, we can share that with each other. Good comments. And jumping ahead a little bit, in these tentative explorations, the visual elements we encounter are intimately related to the experiential emotional kaleidoscope within ourselves. Okay, we understand that. Therefore, while we are bound hand and foot and mouth to our primate habits and conditionings, the normal, although a non-primate outsider would probably classify it as clinically treatable. But then it's actually the normal range of emotions with which we are familiar is blissfully limited. So this is where the author is going at this point. He's telling us, okay, once you get into these spaces and you get into this sense of mood navigation, you also become aware of the fact that the mood, the emotions that we're normally used to are extremely limited, extremely limited. So suddenly you realize how dull and senseless and lifeless they actually are. That's when you begin to see, in fact, that they are reactive. They're actually not emotions. They're just like a cue ball hitting a nine ball. It's just, that's how it happens. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're trying to find the sense and in a sense the foundation of the passion that can come from a different way of opening our eyes. Jumping ahead, human primates, in strict deference to their Neanderthal heritage, dwell in wet, shallow, cliff-like caves of negative body reactions, masquerading as emotions. As primates, we have been trained to restrict our emotional responses to a narrow, sandbox level within the totality of wide-spectrum cues and colorations of mood, which, if we could allow them, would provide us with instantly accessible keys to macro-dimensional labyrinthine chambers. If we could allow them. How do I do that then? How can I allow them?
I think by noticing, if you look at a tree and then notice, and I don't know, if you go with it, you can see the colors becoming brighter.
Okay.
I think the more that you are with it.
As right here, if we could allow them, they would provide us with instantly accessible keys to macro-dimensional chambers.
David, Aria has, an excellent comment. Would that be appropriate for me to
share
that?
Yes, it would be.
excuse me. She says, as one resonates with the mood of the space, others will more and more resonate with each other until we all reach the same note, the same vibration. And Godfrey then says that this is a recognition of a field, which means maintaining, as opposed to allowing others to catch our attention, which would disturb it.
When I was sitting here, I was thinking that I wanted to ask Godfrey if he had the answer, how do I do it? So.
So you allow people to do it by attempting to resonate in frequency with them.
So part of it is that when we get into these chambers, there's a hint and a shadow of much more there. And part of it is, like right now, I can sense in my whole heart chakra area, I'm tensed up, and I'm blocking the more that could come in. It's, the invitation is there. So what can I do to allow it more to be there? And once again, it just takes practice. Like we in the HBM, we talked a lot about using the relaxing of the facial mask